Welcome, everyone. This is SANI, the podcast that celebrates African scientists. I'm your host, Alex Nyako. I'm a senior research specialist at Avery Dennison. And today, I'm very excited that we are joined by Professor Nathaniel Boedu. He's a professor of inorganic chemistry at the Department of Chemistry at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology, located in Ghana. So hello, Professor Boedu, and thank you so much for joining us today on SANI.
Hi, Alex. Thank you very much for having me on your show. It's a great privilege to be on your show. I think that it's been a long time since we had any conversation.
Yeah.
10 years or yes. More. And I'm happy getting to you again through this medium. Yeah.
Very, very happy to have you. Yes. Thank you so much. So, Professor Boedu, would you like to move into our interview? And we usually like to begin by getting to know a bit more about our interviewees. We'd like to know how your background, your career journey, your upbringing and schooling has influenced and shaped the career path in the field that you currently pursue.
Thanks, Alex. So growing up, I had very strict parents. And in Africa, parents could be very, very, very strict. My dad, a journalist, my mom, a teacher. And so what we had to do was to study. And I was fascinated by science right from the onset. I wanted to be an engineer along the line. Later, my dreams changed. I wanted to be a medical doctor. Like, whilst growing up, I had different plans, but all in the sciences, as children do. And when we got to the secondary school, my focus was to do science, but I did not know exactly what I was going to do after school. I thought I would do something more bio and chemistry related. So I was thinking about pharmacy. However, I ended up doing chemistry, which I think is a blessing. Well, at the time I thought it wasn't what I really wanted, but going forward, I've seen that it was a real blessing that came my way. Yeah, talking about my family, I grew up among two other siblings, my older sister, who is a medical doctor in the US now, a nephrologist, and my younger sister, who actually started off as a general arts student, went on to do performing arts, and guess what? She's in a medical school now, trying to become a medical doctor. So that is it. I think that gradually science has shaped us as a family, and my children are going to take after us. My daughter has started already. She's a veterinary medicine student at the Kwame Nkrumah University of Science and Technology. So yeah, we are moving on. Science is interesting, and sometimes the understanding of it is why people shy away from it. But then if you get to know what it actually does to the mind, the brain actually, the formation of the brain, I think that it is something worth doing. As a chemist, I went into inorganic chemistry by chance. And maybe there will be time to talk about it fully, but I started off as a chemist, basic chemist, and then went on to do environmental chemistry because my passion was to do environmental chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
However, along the line, there was a chance to do PhD and in inorganic chemistry. So I took it and did it. And I think that it still falls in line with what I really want to achieve. So that is fine.
Yes, I remember fondly several years back tutoring your environmental chemistry class and how interesting the concept was, and really seeing how excited you were about teaching that program. So Dr. Boedu, if you could tell us more about your research field in inorganic chemistry, what are the main areas and problems that your research is trying to address currently?
Thank you, Alex. My research is mainly on synthesis of new materials, nanomaterials for renewable energy. And this is informed by my background as an environmental chemist. And so it kind of tells on whatever I do. Currently, what I am doing is to synthesize what we call single source precursors. These are complexes, big molecules that contain metal chalcogenides. And if I say metal chalcogenide, I'm talking about metal and sulfur or selenium in the complex. And these have preformed bonds, the metal bonded to these chalcogens within the complex. And the reason why it is a single source precursor is so that we reduce the toxicity that goes along with synthesizing nanomaterials. And then it also has what we need in the right stoichiometry. And so what these complexes do are that they help us to make semiconducting materials. These semiconducting materials act as alternatives to silicon, which is used in solar cells. And the reason being that silicons are expensive, and so we want to come out with alternatives. So basically, that is my research.
So is the electron transfer for these nanomaterials similar to what you would have achieved for, let's say, a pure silicon metal used in solar cells?
Not quite. There's always an improvement. However, it has shown a lot of promise because silicon now works at, if we look at the power conversion efficiency of silicon, is around 20 to 40%. We've had these alternatives working up to about roughly 20% in some cases, and even better. However, it's not fully developed. In some cases, yes, cadmium selenide, cadmium sulfide has even been commercialized. Mm-hmm. And we have perovskites that show a lot of promise. However, stability is an issue. But all these, what we intend to do is to come out with something that matches silicon or even better. So at the moment, I cannot say that they match silicon in terms of electron transfer, but they show a lot of promise.
Okay. Yeah, that's very interesting. So the goal really is to try and push this out primarily into the renewable energy frontier, where we can have alternatives to silicon and still have similar amount of power efficiency.
Or even better. Yes.
That's great. So how does the usual day as an active researcher look like?
Well, for us, as you know, because of the nature of our job, you have your lab, which is made up of PhD students, postgraduate students, and then you also have administrative duties and teaching as well. So it's a lot of planning. Most of the time is the students that push the research, and I supervise. So I visit from time to time in the lab to see what they are doing. But my days are packed with a lot of meetings and teaching. So on a typical day, you have your lecture timetable, and when it is time, you go to the classroom to lecture. And then most of the time, there are other meetings that call for your attention, like the college board meetings, the departmental board meetings, and other meetings in the university committee meetings. So these are parts of the work that we call service. So for us as lecturers, we have three parts to our work. We have the teaching, we have the research, and we have the service. Even though our most often people misconstrue this and think that we are teachers. For research, like I said, the students do a lot on their own because they are postgraduates, and they also help mentor the undergrads who are in the group as well. Mm-hmm. And the concept comes from me, the idea comes from me, we discuss, and then the student takes it up. So that has been the way things go for me in my group.
Okay. Right. So it's a lot of meetings, teaching, and then directing the students within the research group.
Yes.
So when you look back at, or even look for, through your research path, what are some of the memorable highlights and lowlights in your research journey? And if you don't mind sharing those with us.
Oh, all right. So, like I said, I started off as an environmental chemist. At the time I was young in the research field, I remember having a lot of rejections for my first paper. And still, I do remember that very much because it wasn't as easy. It was like, you need to publish or perish, and yet send your paper everywhere and you get a rejection letter. That was the lowest point so far as my career is concerned. But that was when I had to learn quickly. No, at a point, I thought that it was because of the third world that I found myself in. And if I had found myself in other parts of the world, probably this wouldn't be happening to me. And things have really changed over the years because getting literature at the time was difficult. The university was not subscribing to anything. It was just a mess. And research was difficult to do. You know, and sometimes when you don't have the right information, you do things with the little resources that you have and it doesn't get anywhere. Right. Science is science. There is no local science. You see, that is the challenge that we have in Africa. There is no local science. There is no Ghana science and there is no America science. Science is science. So if the facts are right, it goes through. If the facts are not right, they don't go through. And if we need certain equipment to work, you cannot use less accurate or less efficient equipment in this day and age to work and expect those works to match any work done elsewhere in the world. And so it is gradually coming up well, and like I said, things are changing in Africa, especially in Ghana where I am, and we are able to do things like the kind of research that I'm talking to you about, which hitherto was not possible at all. Yeah. So, yes, life has been better now in terms of research because we have equipment that can help us do these things. And because of that, a few grants have been won for the research to improve or continue. Yeah.
So can you share some thoughts on how you bounce back from those times when you received all those rejections in your earlier publication?
So I had to first and foremost read a lot. Because what I was doing, I thought was right. I had to read about how to publish. You know, sometimes we take things for granted. Little things would affect us. One thing I realized was that nobody wanted Ghanaian science. So the title of the paper alone shut the paper down. And what you hear is that this is for local consumption because it should be put in a global context, not in a local context. And most often, this is what we do. We think that because we took it from Kumasi, we should report that it is Kumasi metropolis and all that. Sometimes it affects the reviewer. You know, it influences the decision of the reviewer. It just deters the reviewer from continuing. But we should rather put it in a better way, not to make it look local, even though it is local in the title. So that wherever you did the work appears in the body of the paper. And these things I did not know. And those were some of the mistakes that I did, especially in the area of environmental chemistry. You tend to do such mistakes a lot. But apart from that, I also got training. You know, I started off with a master's, but I got further training at the University of Manchester. You with Professor Paul O'Brien, and I learned a lot from there as well. So that is how come I got to understand these things and work to improve on my research.
Thanks so much for sharing those wisdom nuggets. So one thing that I was reading about when just perusing your work and all the different things that you do is I noticed that you've done a lot of work with so many national and international science organizations. Could you tell us how this has helped to shape and advance research in Ghana and Africa, and tell us a bit more about some of these national and international science organizations that you've been involved with?
All right. So, yes, most of these have come through collaborations. People are looking for African scientists to work with. And it is about positioning oneself to be visible. Visibility is key. We find ourselves in a global environment. And so if you are not visible, no one notices you and everybody passes you by. So in order for us to move on and progress, we need to forge collaborations. And that is how come conferences are important, because it is through conferences that you get to meet people from different backgrounds and how they come in to help, with research. One person cannot know it all.
Right.
And as we go ahead with our work and publish, people also notice us through our work and contact us to work together. So that has been the case. I have had the experience at the University of Manchester also really, really helped me. And because you make friends who later become your partners, and then you grow up with them. And so that also helped. But apart from that, through, like I said, conferences and the works, people have also contacted us to work with us. So that is how come we've had international collaboration here and there. In terms of other organizations, I happen to be with the Ghana Science Association as one of their national executives. That also explains to other scientists in Africa and in Ghana, because Ghana has about 16 public universities. You don't get to see everyone and know everybody. So it is through these organizations that we get to meet and know what we call South-South collaborations, local collaborations here and there, that also help. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, that's. I think the point about collaboration in science is key, and that's one of the things most of our interviewees really talk about, and how that has really helped to advance their career path as well. So, lastly, Professor Brady, would like to know, what advice will you leave with young aspiring scientists coming up in Africa?
So I think that it's all about attitude. When you have it at the back of your mind that it is possible, then you will not see the glass half empty. You see it half filled. Because no matter what we do, we will not have the full complement of whatever we need to work with. But we make do with what we have. I remember in 2010 or so, I was invited to the Royal Society to talk about African science. And it was a platform where we could share what was happening in our own countries. And there were some other guys, other nationals, who said they would never come to Africa after their training, because they believed that the only future they had was in the United Kingdom at the time, because they wouldn't get anything in Africa to work with. I had a similar mindset, because I was looking at all the XRDs, all the SCMs, those big instruments, and was just wondering how these things could come to Ghana. But now as I speak, we have some of these instruments here that are making life comfortable. So it's just a matter of having hope and working hard towards achieving. Sometimes we need to improvise, and it happens everywhere. It is interesting to note that even in the advanced countries, sometimes it is through these collaborations that you're able to get all that you want for the work. All those instruments are not at one place.
Mm.
But sometimes we always, as Africans, think that we are at a disadvantage. And so we fail to appreciate what we have and always think that there is something more that we should get. If we change that kind of mental attitude, it will go a long way to help African science.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Very, very great advice for the young scientists out there looking to pursue a career in science and research. So I'd like to thank you so much, Professor Abwedi, for spending this time with us, for sharing the work that you do, sharing your research journey, and really imparting so much inspiration, so much knowledge, so much guidance to our young and upcoming scientists. So thank you once again for accepting an invitation to join us on SANI.
Thank you, Alex, and it's been a wonderful time with you and a privilege. Thank you.
So you can find us, everyone, on Facebook as SANI, on Instagram at SANI Podcast, and YouTube at SANI Podcast. So don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. And also don't forget to leave us a comment and tell us what you think about today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, everyone, and see you at our next session. Bye.